The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys. Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio. This is the CarCast after USC's 33-17 win over the Utah Utes at Rice-Eccles. Yes, USC won a game in Salt Lake City at Rice-Eccles Stadium against Kyle Whittingham's Utah Utes on a Saturday night. That's right. We're going to talk about it here in this CarCast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy. Over on Facebook, we're at facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play. Wherever you may find podcasts, we are there. Our bonus episodes are on Patreon, patreon.com/Reign of Troy. Our email address is reignoftroy@fancenter.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC.
Suck it, what's Bruin Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Reign of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. I gave an assignment to Twitter this evening. I said, describe that game in one word. If I said that to you, I said, Alicia, describe this game in one word, what would your one-word game review be?
That would be my one word. Is count as a word?
Sure, it's a filler word, but it is a word.
Let's go with this filler word.
Is that a good hmm or a bad hmm?
I'm not sure.
I mean, that's fair. I'll
explain myself.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. Objectively, that was a significantly improved performance from USC pretty much all around. Maybe not at quarterback, but we'll talk about Keaton. But across the board, I thought USC just played better at every position that I could think of, particularly the problem positions. The linebackers were the best they've been all season, and that made all the difference for the defense. The offensive line, I thought, started very strong. There were some shaky moments as the game went on, but I thought that they generally held their own and were not the disaster that they were against Arizona. So there was definite improvement. I think that this is a game that USC can look to build on, for sure. Why I say, is that I think this is a zero-sum game. And I cannot decide if this was USC looking good or better or Utah looking not good or worse than the last time they played.
You think this was zero sum, really?
I cannot help but feel that this was zero sum. Now, I think that next week against Colorado, will tell us a lot about how I feel about this performance. Like, I don't know if that's fair.
Hold on. Where in the world are we with football?
I know.
We're saying the Colorado game is going to be more of a gauge of where USC is than the Utah game on the road at Rice-Eccles.
Right?
Like, what the hell is football in 2020?
But here's the thing is, like, okay, so Utah, Cameron Rising was the starter, and he went out injured at quarterback, and they brought in Jake Bentley, who is about as good of a backup as Utah could have hoped for, to be sure. And he comes in and he's, you know, has a couple of good moments, but mostly he's not very good. Utah's defense, we don't know what they are yet because they're replacing a lot of key guys. The only evidence I have to suggest that USC, that this might be more of a reflection of USC than Utah, is that Utah did return four of their starting offensive linemen from last year, and USC's defensive front pretty much had their way with Utah in the trenches. So I think that bodes very well for USC's defense in this game. But at the same time, you know, Utah is, we don't know what these quarterbacks are going to be for them. They don't have a ton of weapons at receiver. Their running backs are not Zach Moss, and I genuinely don't know. And this is what sucks, is that under different circumstances I would be more than willing to sit here and say, wow, that was a much improved game for USC. It was really good to see them turn a corner like that. But because of what we've seen over the last couple of years, and because of what we saw in those first two games, I'm hesitant to call this a corner turning, and I'm more inclined to sort of sit back and wonder, was this about Utah?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I agree in a lot of senses. I think that Utah was very unimpressive tonight.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Yeah, and I think maybe that's why I feel the way I do, because I didn't feel like Utah was a good team, like just the eye test. Now, the reason this is kind of zero sum is that sometimes the eye test doesn't work because the other team makes you look bad. Maybe Utah's quarterbacks didn't look that good because they had USC's pass rush in their face the whole time. And that's where I don't want to let some of the negativity that we've been feeling over the first couple of weeks to cloud what was a really promising performance and a really bright performance from a lot of individuals for USC. I think the other thing that sort of clouds it a little bit is that USC's offense still doesn't look like it's been fully unlocked, and that is definitely a concern. Keaton Slovis is getting the job done, but it still doesn't look like he's reached the potential that we know he has. And so, like, on one hand, the problems are still the same. On the other hand, you know, there's so much room for USC to grow still that this is the performance that they could build on, for sure. I guess it just depends on, at this stage, is anybody a glass half full kind of person watching USC at this stage? Like, I don't know. I feel very, very torn, because at my heart, I am an optimist. At my heart, I am the person who buys in, like, this is the turnaround game. But I've been beaten down so much that, like, I have this, like, I'm skittish about trusting this USC team, which is why I picked Utah to win the game in the first place before the game. And that was really the death knell, because, of course, USC was going to come out and comfortably beat Utah after you and I both predicted a USC loss. But, like, I'm still feeling the remnants of don't trust this team. Like, just Don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. To me, this was a game where there was a million different factors. I think Utah was not impressive at all. They looked rusty on offense. I mean, I think SC's defense was very good for the most part.
Yeah. There's one or two drives that are just like, where'd the good defense go? But,
right.
But other than that, I thought that was one of the better defensive performances we've seen in the last year, maybe two?
Yeah, I mean, Utah had 2 75-yard drives. Apart from that, they didn't really do much. you look at the yardage, and Utah gained, you know, well over 300 yards. SC gained over 300 yards. The yardage discrepancy was not huge. Part of that was field position. SC's average field position this game was their own 38-yard line. You compare that to Utah's, which is their own 27. That's a much different starting point. But for me, this game has a bunch of different factors. On one hand, SC was better in the red zone, 5 of 6. The one miss in terms of that they didn't score was the interception, which was right after a Vavae Malapai touchdown run that was negated by a holding penalty. So, like, well, if he didn't hold right there, that would be, you know, 7 points on the board, followed by the interception, huge swing of momentum there. But on the other hand, SC gets 5 turnovers from Utah. 5. Some of them, they were forced. Some of them, surely not, because I thought Utah played very sloppily, especially on offense.
I thought they greased up that ball, though, because everybody was dropping
it. Yeah, I mean, both offenses were sloppy with the football, 100%. And you look at it, SC gets 5 turnovers. They only score 13 points off of those turnovers. SC turned the ball over twice. Utah got 7 points off of turnovers.
Yeah.
Like and those 7 points were a scoop and score.
Yeah.
A defensive TD. SC did not get a defensive TD. They nearly set themselves up for one in that they had a touchdown drive that was all of 4 yards, when they recovered the fumble on the play that Cameron Rising left the game on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look at it, SC wins this game 33-17. Why do they win the game 33-17? Because they, more often than not, got points on their drives. The problem is, they got field goals. And field goals are going to beat Utah, a Utah offense that, again, did not look good. It's their week one. They did have to go to the backup quarterback in Jake Bentley, but he's someone with loads of experience. Someone most people, I feel like, thought was going to win the battle.
I thought he was going to win the battle, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's not like he's a true backup, but he is the backup, right? Someone who wasn't preparing to be the starter in this game. And the 33 points is going to win this game because of that. But what if Utah had an offense that was formidable? What if SC didn't control the line of scrimmage on the defensive side of the ball, right? You look at it, SC left 19 points on the board again. 4 times they had to settle for a field goal. Mm-hmm. Every time you settle for a field goal, those are 4 points you're leaving on the board. Obviously, you take the field goal over, you know, a turnover or over a turnover on downs. 100%, you take the field goal over that. But you're still leaving 4 points on the board by not getting into the end zone. It's another week in which SC doesn't score in the third quarter. 3 straight games, on the bounce, no TDs in the third quarter.
Well,
all of them, they've had several opportunities to score.
Can we talk for a second about the third quarter thing, though? Because this got brought up during the game, and I vividly remember in 2017 doing research into...
And we talked about the scoreless third
the
quarters.
The scoreless third quarters. There was a long stretch where USC couldn't...
But this is worse, though.
Well, but
in the sense that it's worse because it's more agonizing that they're getting inside...
Right.
You know, the red zone repeatedly, and they're not scoring.
But the point is,
I feel like
this
in 2017, they just didn't get, they didn't do anything in those third quarters.
Right. But I think that's the issue is that this, for 4 years now, USC has not been a team that dominates the third quarter, which is why USC is not a team that pulls away,
that puts games away
from teams. Yeah.
Right. Because you look at it, and they left 19 points on the board. Wait a minute, my math wrong. It's 23 points they left on the board. They got 4 field goals, 4 points left on the board. Per field goal is 16. The interception is 7.
Yeah.
23 points. SC wins this game 33-17. They could have won it by dropping a 50-burger on Utah.
Well, and that's...
And having completely no doubt. And I don't feel like you're changing that much in the game just to finish off your drives, which is the frustrating part about this team.
Which is why USC never looks impressive.
Right.
But if they got those big point totals, it would change a lot of the narrative around USC, but they don't. And
Absolutely.
then the other problem here is that, and I think we talked about this before the game, that this was a game that was kind of a crapshoot for USC because either they were going to lose or they were going to beat Utah, and it was going to feel like we just talked about the to start the show, like, well, this is a Utah team that's ranked 130th in returning production and had their first 2 weeks canceled, and this is their first week, blah 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 blah, all those reasons. So like, this game was set up, if we thought Utah had a good defense, if we knew Utah had good defense, we might look at 33 points and say, you know what, that's 33 points on a good defense.
Right. But, if they had Lucky Fotu and John Pennacini and
right.
Bradley Anae and Jalen Drew,
but what
all
if,
those guys.
What if Utah goes forward for the rest of the season and holds everybody to, under 20 points? Then you change.
And it is at Rice Eccles, that elevation,
right.
All that stuff.
Well, look, and this is another thing I wanted to bring up because, again, I don't want to be like the super negative person. So I'm going to bring this up because it's something that popped into my head. The big, big, big improvement for USC in this game was that even if Utah was sluggish because this was their first game, even if this was Utah replacing all of their players and having a rough start to their season with COVID and with everything else, even if that was all the case, USC has gone to Rice Eccles or has gone to the state of Utah and played poorly. USC has traveled wherever they've traveled and played poorly enough
right.
to lose, regardless of the opposition they face. So that was another area of improvement where even if USC was kind of shaky in this game, they weren't so shaky that they couldn't, ultimately get a comfortable win.
Yeah, which is why I think that on paper, you look at it, SC wins this game by 16 points on the road at Rice Eccles against the two-time defending division champs, a place where they haven't won since 2012. They haven't won on a Saturday since 1917. They haven't won in the state of Utah on a Saturday since 2004. Like, all these things, right? Mind you, obviously, plenty of those stats are wonky, for
They're
sure.
A little juiced.
But the point is that these players were there at Utah, so many of them, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were still on the team back in 2016 that lost with Sam Darnold. These guys know what it's like to play against Utah. They know what it's like to beat Utah, but they see what Utah does. They see what Utah gets out of their schedule. They see what Utah gets out of their record. And they force 5 turnovers, never allowing a point in the second half. This game never felt like it was in doubt, really, since the second quarter. SC wins as comfortably as they could have, blah, blah, blah. And the problem here is that because of week one and because of week two, but more importantly, because of last season
and because the season
of,
before.
Because of 2018 and because of 2017 and because of swaths of 2016, big parts of 2015, you cannot sit here and really, if you're a diehard SC fan, you can't sit here and be happy with this win and completely stoked about it. That's sad, isn't it? Like, it's really sad. Like, this should be one of those games where you look at it and go, you know what? You went into Rice Eccles, a place that you struggle, and you got a big win. You got a big win that basically, solidifies your stranglehold over everyone else in the Pac-12 South, puts you one huge step forward in the division, especially on a day that UCLA loses, Colorado doesn't play, Arizona loses, ASU doesn't play. Nobody in the South won a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was the ideal Saturday for SC. And yet, you sit here and go, well, they did what they should have done, but they could have done more. And the only reason you're sitting here and saying they could have done more is because so many times over and over and over again, they haven't done enough to do more. They did enough to get this win. They did enough to get a 16-point win. And that's a huge step forward.
They covered the spread.
They covered the spread. They did what they should have done. And for this team, that's a huge first step. So don't get me wrong about any of that.
Yeah, and that's why I'm trying to sort of couch my weirdness about this game with like a genuine expression of that was a relatively good performance for USC. I would even say it was a good performance for USC with one or two, little things that you still need to clean up. But it wasn't the kind of performance that makes you worry about USC the way that that week one or week two did.
At the same point, though, I look at this game, and by the way, my one word description of this game is boring. I thought it was boring.
It was weird. For a game with as many turnovers as it had,
right?
It was weirdly non-eventful. Except for the time that the cameras went out, and that was really funny.
I think if you watched this as a neutral observer, you would have changed the channel at some point very quickly.
Yeah, or you would have been like the folks on Friday night who were watching the Air Force game and basically like couldn't understand why they sat through that second half.
Sure.
Because it was so bad. And this wasn't like a bad game.
And that's the thing. That's the weird part about this game is that I don't think this is a bad game for SC. And it seems weird to sit here and say that a 16-point win over Utah on the road is a game that you can't feel excited about.
Well, we predicted a loss, too.
So that's the frustrating part, because I feel like an absolute hypocrite.
Well,
when I'm sitting here and saying that you need to enjoy the little things about college football, but this was just one of those games that was just boring. And that's not necessarily a knock on SC. That's just how the game played out for both teams. Absolutely. Right?
Yeah. No, it was weird. And I don't know if it was just the late night. I don't know if it was some sluggishness from Utah. I don't know if it was the normal road sluggishness from USC, although I think that wasn't as much of a factor as it was. But, you know, there were a lot of good plays that the Trojans made. There weren't any like jaw-dropping, oh my gosh, how did he do that kind of things. But it was, you know, consistent good plays from players who I think that can be very excited that they've put in 3 weeks in a row of that kind of performance, like the defensive front. And then guys who really made a vast improvement, like the linebackers did. So, and the offensive line as well. So, you know, I think that it was an understated performance in a lot of ways. On the broadcast, they talked about how they didn't have any Randy Moss, you got mossed moments in the game. And that's true. Like, there weren't any big...
What was the
highlight of the game was Drake Jackson catching the overthrown
screen. A ball that was thrown right to him.
Yeah. Or... Marlon Tupelo forcing the fumble.
Is it Bentley's scramble? I mean,
from
both sides, there was not a highlight.
The scoop and score was probably the highlight. If you're putting together a highlight package on ESPN, I think the scoop and score is the only one you look at and go like, that's got to be in there. But that's what I'm saying. That's not to deride the game. But like you said, it was a little bit understated. It was a little bit.
It was extremely understated.
In a few years, we won't remember much about this game.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's one of those games where I feel like not a lot happened, but a whole bunch happened. There were five turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
There were plenty of drives in which SC settled for field goals. And maybe that's why you don't have all the highlights, because there weren't that many touchdowns in the game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that big Keenan Christian run was nice.
That's right, 47 yards.
The tight ends got involved. Well, the tight end got involved. Eric Cromenhoek had a touchdown.
The Cromenhoek for Mackey campaign is on.
He's taken off, man. My boy, Eric Cromenhoek.
Three catches,
look good. I mean, okay, can I go on my little Eric Cromenhoek soapbox
for a second?
As far as like tight ends as receiving targets, I know everyone's been infatuated with the idea of Josh Fallow, and you know Jude Wolf looks like somebody who might develop into somebody that USC can rely on. Drake London has sort of taken over the, you know, essentially he's the tight end situation. But like the way that USC used Eric Cromenhoek in this game was exactly what I would have liked to have seen for many years past, because I remember when he was a freshman, I remember watching him in practice going like, you know, the word on him coming out of high school was he's just a blocking guy. And I was like, no, the dude can catch the ball. Like, he's not like a special athlete who's going to go out and make the crazy highlight reel play. But like, he'll catch the ball if you throw it to him.
He looked like Reynolds Tuffer tonight.
Yeah. Just no nonsense. He's a pro. He's just going to go out there and you can find him. And defenses have so much else to worry about with USC's offense that you'd imagine he'd be available a little bit more often. And in this game, this is exactly what, like, I imagine this is how you can use him. And you saw a little bit of it last week with the touchdown that they threw to him against Arizona, I'm really glad they went back to that well, and I hope they continue to go back to that well, because I think that is a way that this offense can sort of get out of some of the groove slumps, anti-grooves that they get into sometimes. But I don't know. I like to see it.
Ruts.
Thank you. Some of the ruts that USC gets into. Yes.
It's midnight.
I have not had enough caffeine to...
We're going to start the pot, and you're like, can we just start already? I'm
dying. Free. Yeah. It's been a long day. This is the problem with, like, games that start at 7:30 p.m., is that it's already been a long day for me. Like, there's already been a lot going on. I never would have thought I would say this, but I would much prefer the 9 a.m. kickoff to this.
Yeah, come on.
I know. But like, no. Yeah.
No. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Lisa's going to caffeinate, and we're going to wrap this thing up with more discussion. Probably a little bit focused on what SC did compared to last week, the ups and downs. I want to talk about this USC offense a little bit more. And Keaton Slovis, you know, since we cannot talk about Keaton Slovis' arm and his throwing ability after this week, we have to get it all in this CarCast.
Yeah, definitely not a storyline at all.
Never gonna talk about it ever again.
No, you know, definitely.
After this week, it is donezo.
I have no reason to talk about it ever.
None. Zilch.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So let's get to talking about that. All right, Alicia, I want to talk about this offense and how they compared to last week and the week before and last season. I said that this was one of those games where on paper it looks really good for USC. You win by 16 points on the road, all those things, those are reasons to feel good about it. We talk about the defensive performance. Up front, they look great. Nick Figueroa, dude. He was in the backfield immediately on every single down, it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
Great, 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 great outing for him. Kenai Mauga was all over the place. Randall Goforth made his presence known many times. This was really the best defensive performance maybe since Cal last year, again against the backup quarterback after Chase Garbers leads that game. But USC's defense looked good, for sure. And yet you look at it on offense, and I think on offense is where SC scores the most points they have all season. Sorry, no, 34 last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 33, one fewer than last week. And it felt like 8 fewer, if not 48 fewer than last week, based on SC's inability to consistently get in a groove. The second quarter, they score 4 times. One of those is on a 4-yard touchdown drive, and there's a 75-yard drive and a 40-yard drive. There was the interception that was thrown in there as well, the lone red zone missed opportunity. But so much of this came down to poor blocking up front. They could not run the ball in this game. Marquise Stepp was out. Stephen Carr was... are we calling that?
Injured, apparently, but vaguely. But, like, I want to push back on the idea that they couldn't run the ball in this game, because, and this is what I'm having a hard time squaring what I'm seeing on the stat sheet with what I experienced watching the game.
Okay.
I thought Vivai Malapei ran the ball really well.
Yeah, and it was 3.1 yards per carry.
Well, that's what I'm saying. How did it end up with 3.1 yards per carry when he, to me, ran the ball well for most of the game? The only thing I can think of is
there were a couple of those botched draw plays.
Well,
I want to say one was to Keenan Christon.
One was to Keenan Christon, but the last drive of the first half was all handoffs to Vi that just got stuffed, and then they just gave him the ball a bunch of times at the end of the game, and he wasn't getting a lot of yards. So, like, part of me thinks that just got his average got tanked. At the end of the game. Let's see, we've got
fourth quarter. He was
Vi for three, Vi for one, Vi for two,
negative two, no gain, and negative one. So the fourth quarter Vi was not good. But they
I don't think Vi was not good.
It was the blocking. There's the blocking.
Utah knew that USC was running out the clock, they weren't running. But that the point was not to gain yards necessarily. The point is always to gain yards. But the important thing was staying in bounds, and I thought that that Vi did a very good job of that as a rusher and as a pass catcher.
Yeah, and you look at the first quarter, gains of 9, 4, 7, and 8. Okay, it's a good average. You absolutely take that. But even in the second quarter, 0, 2, 2, 14, 2, 1, 1. And I don't think this is about Vi. I think it's about the blocking up front. Well, I thought the offensive line had another poor performance.
Well, they started very strong. They started very well in the first quarter, and then in the second quarter, it was a steep drop-off when it dropped off.
Well, there was this weird combination of the pass pro came and went. The run blocking surely came and went. And the pass pro had this weird mix when we talk about Keaton Slovis, and let's transition to talking about Keaton Slovis right now. We know the arm thing, we're not talking about it after today, right? That was clearly a focal point. Every single throw, you kind of like had to think about it. And why? Because SC made such a big deal about being awkward about it, right?
Are we? So here's a thought, because I watched this game and I thought that Slovis looked off, but not in the same exact ways he did against ASU or Arizona.
It was a
different kind of off, where it wasn't like the ball was wobbling every which way. I mean, it was a little wobbly.
I got a theory. I think that the wobbly talk was so prevalent and, you know, Helton goes all in with the you're never going to talk about it ever again kind of thing and saying that he threw the ball on Monday, the best he's ever seen him and all this kind of stuff. I think, and this is completely speculation, so just this crazy Michael talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did that put doubt in Keaton Slovis's head? Maybe not doubt, but like, I wonder if there's a serious confidence issue, because it wasn't always the pass protection that lacked. A lot of times, Keaton Slovis just stayed in the pocket for way too long.
And missed open, and not missed as far as like throwing the ball, but like missed, like didn't even attempt to throw the ball to open receivers.
Right, and you know, Utah dropped 7-8 guys all the time. You know how the recipe is on defense. But even when SC had receivers open, he was checking down, or he was just holding it and eating it, and he wasn't making that throw. And, like, I have to wonder, was he not making the throw out of the thought, well, maybe it'll be wobbly?
Well,
like,
but then...
Like, is it the self-fulfilling prophecy at that point?
But then in the second half, he starts throwing into triple coverage every play, and you're like, what the heck is going on, Keaton?
But early on in the second half, they got the plays out much quicker, and all of a sudden there was more success on that offense. That first drive of the third quarter I thought was great.
Yeah.
They got the ball out quick. You saw some screens to the edge. You finally got to see Brew McCoy and Amon-Ra St. Brown have the ball, Tyler Vaughns have the ball in their hands with them to do something with it with their legs.
Yeah.
Something we haven't seen all year.
Right.
All year. Three games.
Well, but it's half of half of the season's gone. So, yes, it's been all year.
Right.
But no, I agree. It was weird because it comes and goes for him. So my theory after the Arizona game was that he was being disrupted by the pass rush. And that might still be on the table, but it clearly wasn't as big of an issue or as fervent an issue against Utah as it was against Arizona to me, because the pass blocking, even though it broke down a few times, it wasn't disastrous. Maybe on rewatch I'll change my mind about that, but I thought that it looked like Keaton might have been in his own head a little bit, and that is definitely something that USC needs to worry about. But I also I'm starting to think also that there are three big factors here, and it's not any one of them, it's all of them together. The first factor is I think that the Keaton is being disrupted by the pass rush or by the internal clock that he has running, the internal like pressure clock that maybe is running a tick too fast because of what he's been playing in front of for his whole career so far. Number two, I think his arm does look like it's not as sharp.
Lively.
Yeah, and I just, you can't help but think back to that elbow injury that he had in the Holiday Bowl, and that there might be some lingering effects there that are impacting him mechanically. So it's particularly important for him to be on top of his mechanics, because if he doesn't have anything to sort of fall back on, because the arm is clearly not as strong as it was in the past. So that's number two. And the number three is, I think we're watching every pass too closely. I don't think I've ever watched a pass for what it looked like.
How can you not, though? If Clay Helton's going to come out here and say that you're never going to see ever again,
I'm not
like,
saying
how can
we're
not,
I'm
right?
not saying we're wrong to. I'm just saying that we are, I think, at a nitpicky stage almost, where like
for sure.
I'm not just watching right. the outcome of where the pass is going. Now I'm watching like, did it get like how crisp was it? Because like that Tyler Vaughn's touchdown. It gets exactly where it needs to go, but it's not a pretty looking pass. Like, so then are we judging that too harshly, even though it got where it needed to go? Like,
no,
those kinds of things, I think we can,
nitpicky.
Yeah, we can be a little bit nitpicky, but I think it's a combination of all three. I think we're examining them every single pass a little bit too closely, and probably, seeing mechanical, errors where that's just normal. I do think there are instances where his mechanics or his arm or whatever it is that's going on with his motion looks wrong, for sure, because he's inaccurate in a way that we definitely didn't see at any point last year. And the other thing is, I think his inaccuracy is occasionally forced by the way he has to rush, because who knows what the pass rush is going to look like on any given play. So I think there's a lot of factors that are going into why Keaton looks the way that he does. My biggest concern would be the mental side of how, like you said, the lack of confidence that he seems to show occasionally, and how that impacts the offense.
Yeah, it absolutely impacts the
offense. I think
that's
the hardest thing to fix.
On a night where you're struggling to run consistently, where your leading rusher is getting 0, 2, 2, 14, 2, 2, 1, 1 yards in the second quarter on all of the carries, right? Like, that isn't reliable. And if it was more reliable, it'd be easier to, you know, go away from Keaton at times and help things out. But the run game isn't reliable enough to do that right now. At least it wasn't on Saturday against Utah. Whether that changes with Stepp or Carr in there, I don't necessarily think so. I think a lot of it is just the blocking in general. And the lack of creativity and how everything is being put together. But yeah, it feels like once he gets out of a rhythm, it's hard to get him back in it. But yet we say those kind of things and they put together a 75-yard drive where everything clicks. And you're like, how did this look so easy? That 75-yard drive in which they cap it off with the touchdown pass to Tyler Vaughns, it looked way too easy.
Yeah, well, because that's what USC can do when the weapons that USC has. I mean, Tyler Vaughns, they left him wide open on, and credit to Slovis on the one where they sent the corner blitz, because Slovis got the ball out to him quickly. And, you know, again, it wasn't a particularly pretty pass, but Vaughns made the catch and then got a bunch of yak yards, and that made a huge difference for USC on that drive. So there were a couple, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown had a nice catch and run, and you had those moments, but these are the athletes that USC has, and this is what makes USC's offense so formidable, even when they're not in a groove. Now, the question, I guess, that comes up now is, what'll it take to get USC in a groove? And is this just the process of settling into the season? Because we didn't see the offense really take off until the second half of last season. Is that just the nature of what this will look like? And this is where, like, next week against Colorado is going to say a lot about which way that goes.
And to be fair, the offense excelled after the book was already out on SC,
mm-hmm.
right? So, yeah, so maybe there is a way to come back around this. I don't know. And one of those games is against Cal, a team that we would have expected to cover this defense pretty well. Or this offense pretty well. So, I don't know. This game is just so weird to look at in so many different ways. I don't feel more confident about this USC offense. I feel a little bit less confident. I feel more confident about USC's defense. I feel more confidence about the team in general to be able to take advantage of enough opportunities to not let the game slip through their hands. At the same point, this could have been a blowout dominating win against a team where we really look at it and say, yeah, Utah was just not good. If SC scores nothing but touchdowns in the second half instead of field goals, it's 45-17. And you look at it and you think, yeah, SC got all they could out of that game.
But
even if it wasn't 100% that they could have got out of it, you'd think it was just by finishing off those drives in the second half.
But so I guess my question is this USC graduating from getting nothing out of those red zone trips to getting field goals out of those red zone trips to getting touchdowns out of those red zone trips? Or is this USC just, you know, still having the same problems in the red zone? And the difference is just that they have a kicker who they know now can make a kick.
I think the problem goes back to what you said about Utah's defense. If this was the Utah defense of last year, we would be lauding this offensive performance.
Yeah, or at least we'd say, you know what, that's a tough defense to put those tough points up.
Everything would have a caveat like that, right? And right now, we cannot say that about Utah's defense. And we're going to learn about what Utah is going forward, at least as much as we can in a shortened COVID season, right? So, I don't know, man. I don't know. It was a weird game. We don't know what you guys think about this game. The one-word reviews were pretty pessimistic. Lots of boring snooze fests. A lot of people upset, not happy, saying that it looked like another Clay Helton game. Again, saying these in a lot of one words or combining words to make one and what have you. But, yeah, what else can you say?
I mean, one thing I do want to say is that I think that it's clear that USC has quite a few quite good players, and I don't want them to get lost.
Just figuring this out?
No, I mean, like, so I was very relieved because, you know, we've seen players have one good game and then, or two good games, and then they sort of just fall off a cliff. I mean, it was a great relief to me to see Marlon Tupelotu and Nick Figueroa and Tuli Tupelotu and the guys and Hunter Echols and Drake Jackson and all of them turn up for a third week in a row and all look very exceptional. It's nice to see that front continue to show that this isn't just a one-off. They are actually playing very well, and I want to credit Vic Saoto for getting what he's getting out of that unit, because genuinely I think that the defensive line is the best unit on the team right now, and I think they're doing a hell of a job. And then on top of that, you know, Todd Orlando, we talked last week about how I'm willing to extend to Todd Orlando a benefit of the doubt that I'm not willing to extend to Clay Helton or Graham Harrell or USC's offense, just because he is new to the scene. He is trying to integrate his defense without spring camp, without a normal fall camp, all of those kinds of things. So I was going to, you know, withhold some judgment on him. And I think it bodes very well for the future with Todd Orlando that the linebackers were able to take such a positive turn this week after two really not good performances over the last couple of weeks. And it was really encouraging to see Kenai Mauga step up and be a starter and look quite good, actually. It was, I had been watching some other college football games earlier in the day, and one of the things that I took note of was how often you see guys making tackles at the line of scrimmage and how that's not something you ever see USC do, but then turn up on, you know, tonight and Kenai Mauga's right there at the line of scrimmage, and Raylan Goforth is having those moments. Did they have a perfect performance? No. I thought there were a couple times where they weren't where they needed to be, or they missed a tackle or whatever. Those are the kinds of things you work through. But the drastic improvement, the reason this defensive performance looked as good as it did was because, I'm convinced, is because the linebackers played their role in it where they were not playing their role last time. Isaiah Polamau and Talanoa Hufanga both out making plays.
Elijah Griffin looked good.
Elijah Griffin had a couple. Well, Elijah Griffin had a couple passes that he really should have picked off. So maybe work on that. But
Chris Steele got a pick at the end.
Yeah, Chris Steele got a pick at the end. So I thought that, you know, the defense is looking like more and more like it's coming together, and that's very, very encouraging. And then on offense, Brew McCoy, I put him in the over-under for this week because I thought that he's going to start to emerge as a bigger target for USC, and that came to pass in this game. It was very nice to see him get the targets that he got and make the plays that he made. So those are, you know, those are very exciting things. And then you have, you know, Keenan Christen, who is as fast as we remember him. He's a guy that, you know, I think as he gets more and more opportunities, we're going to see him really take off, because that you can't teach that speed. That speed is ridiculous. So there is a lot to be excited about with this team if you look at the individual players. And I think that we spend a lot of time talking about the big picture stuff, and sometimes we gloss over, like, no, Marlon Tupelotu is like a beast, an utter beast. And you know, some of the other guys that USC has on this team are actually playing very well. And those are positive signs for, if this is a turning of the corner moment, then those guys will have even more opportunities to shine.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's all very well said. By the way, I crunched some numbers again. Kenny Christen had a 47-yard run. 47 yards.
It was a beauty, too, because it was... Well, okay, so the delayed handoffs didn't work on any other play except that one, but the delayed handoff to Keenan Christen was, like, gorgeous. Everything about it was...
He never even had top speed, either.
No, I mean...
He was doing that, like, Adoree Jackson coast thing. Yeah. Where you just glide.
But he made everybody else look like they were running on sand.
Yes. Great run from him. And I know you can't do this, but I'm going to do it anyways. If you take that run away, I'm gonna leave the podcast with this worrying thing about USC's run game. And I know there was no step, there was no car.
Are you taking the sack yardage away too, though?
No, because... I'll do both. Like, I've run both numbers. So if you take the 47 yards away, SC ran the ball for 1.53333 yards per carry, 46 yards on 30 carries.
See, and again, I'm gonna pay close attention, because on the rewatch, because I genuinely don't think that the run game was that horrendous this week. Particularly, they were much better in short yardage situations. They weren't getting absolutely demolished in those short yardage situations. So I wonder if this is a number that is being heavily influenced by runs that were doomed to fail to begin with.
That's still part of the running game, though.
Yes, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Like, but if you're an air raid offense and you're running the ball to run out the clock in the fourth quarter, like...
No, I get that. But again, like, Levi Malapaya had, like, 6 carries in the second quarter that gained no more than 2 yards.
Well, one of those was at the goal line for a touchdown. One of those was at the goal line for a touchdown, and the one before it was... avoiding a 4-yard loss by getting 0 yards. But like,
sure, but the point is that this offense is not reliable on the was okay, not reliable on
here's
the
what here's here's what I'll push back on. I think Clay Helton is wrong to put any stake in rushing numbers. I think USC should own that they're an air raid team, and it doesn't matter what running totals that they get, so long as the runs that they have out there are efficient. And what we saw in the first quarter, I thought was very efficient running, because they were running at the zone. And that is what I like. We've watched some games that we've watched this year where the broadcasters get obsessed with the idea of USC having to establish the run. I firmly am in the camp that no, they should pass to set up the run. And that the run should be something that they take advantage of a defense if they're sitting back. If they're not sitting back, you don't run the ball. That's my opinion. But
yeah, you know. I agree. Still, I took out the numbers, the sack adjusted yards. If you take away Keenan Christian's 47 yards on that one run, 67 yards on 25 carries, apart from the 47-yard run.
Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't think that's...
Not good enough.
But that's not the... Okay, so I know that those are the numbers that we could focus on, and I'm not doing this because of Vi. I would do this if this were Carr or Step 2. My point is, the reason USC's offense wasn't good tonight was not because of the running game. USC's offense wasn't good tonight because Keaton Slovis was missing his targets too often. Like, that's the simple truth of it.
Right. So, and if he found his targets more, then there'd be more opportunities in the run game because maybe Utah has to defend differently. All of that plays a role. So absolutely.
Like, I don't think it matters what USC did on the ground is what I'm saying. Like, what matters to me is that the quarterback was not at his best, and that's why the offense was not at his best.
But maybe when your quarterback's not at your best, you should be able to run better than 2.6 8 yards per carry.
Maybe you should have a better offensive line. Like, that's a much deeper question I think is...
I agree.
But maybe you also have to recognize you don't have a good run-blocking offensive line.
Well, then
don't
run the ball 25 times.
But that's what I'm saying, is that I think that they make a mistake when they act like they have to establish the run. The best running that they did was when it wasn't expected. When they run when it's expected.
So don't run the ball 25 times.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. But when you're running the ball in the end of the game to close out the game, it's going to, you know... impact those numbers.
But yes, again, but it wasn't just the... Okay, whatever. I'm giving up.
I just think the running game was the least important thing about this whole game. Okay, so I don't know why we spent so much time talking about it.
When we get emails upset about the run game, I'm just...
I mean, if you're upset about the run game, you should spend way more time watching Keaton Slovis in this game.
All right. That'll wrap up the episode. Thanks for listening, as always. Now is your time to step up. Send us an email. Send us your thoughts on the Rant of Troy rave line, 213-373-1872. Ask us a question. Tell us what you thought about USC's win over the Utes. Tell us what you thought about the podcast, about the CarCast. What do you think about the thoughts? What did we say here that you agreed with? What did we say that you disagreed with? What do you wish we talked about? What do you wish we didn't talk about? All those things. Let us know. It is your show. Take the thing over. I want to hear from you, Poway. I want to hear from you, Redondo Beach, Mission Beach, Huntington Beach, Salt Lake City Beach. This is your show. Okay, I'm just going to shut up.
I'm just going to let you do your thing, man.
All right, we'll be back next time. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.